podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
American football is coming to Ireland. Northwestern versus Nebraska at the Aviva Stadium, Dublin, 27th of August, 2022. Good news, that's a Saturday. That means that we are going to be there, the NC Show crew, providing we can get Ollie and Mike through customs. But I'm pretty sure we can. So we should be there for this in the build-up for the game. It is going to go off. collegefootballireland.com. That's the website to visit. Register interest, collegefootballireland.com. Get involved. Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show. Asmir Begovic in the house. Fan favorite. Patriots super fan. Thoroughly good guy. Always a lot of fun to catch up with him. It's been a while, so we are going to make it a goodie. Lots of questions from you guys, from me. We've even let Propo have a few questions in the mix as well. So it is all go here on the NC Show. We will go straight down to business with the fantastic Asmir Begovic. Asmir, man, pleasure to see you. How is life treating you?
Nat, it's always great to see you. Life's treating me pretty good, to be honest. Season's finished, so I'm actually at home with the family in the off season. So I'm quite happy now. So it's nice. I can relax a little bit. How are you?
Long time no see. I'm good, man. Yeah, it has been a long time. We're trying to work it out. And we were saying just before we started recording that it is good to be able to kick back and talk ball with you in the off season. Because I imagine, particularly the season that Everton had, I imagine it's quite difficult to switch off too much until the last week of the season, right?
Yeah, honestly, yeah. Tell me about it. It was it was up there with the most stressful season of my life. So
was it? Yeah. I mean, it doesn't surprise me, but would you, as if she say stressful? I mean, obviously stressful when relegation's a threat, but as a player, particularly when it ends well as it did, would you rather that kind of season? You maybe have already answered this question already with what you just said, but would you rather that kind of season or mid-table, out the fourth round?
Mid-table.
Would you? Really?
Mid-table. No. It's, you know, at the end, of course, you feel like you've done something because there was that sort of relief and some sense of accomplishment, which is a really, like, all wrong. You know, it's never, you know, teams the size of Everton and clubs the size of Everton, of course, bigger clubs, you know, gone down or whatever has happened in the past, but shouldn't be in that position. And obviously before, right, if you look at the last few years, 9th, 10th, 11th, it's not good enough. And then,
yeah,
you would take this all day long, of course, over having to fight, you know, fight over your survival until literally 3 or 4 days before the end of the season.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm glad it did end the right way, land the right way. So, you know, congratulations for that, because I'm sure that's a way off your mind. And now the good news is you can, at least for a couple of weeks anyway, sit back, watch the end. Bet you'll be watching the NBA finals. You'll be getting all across those. Yeah.
Yeah. I can proper like dive into this stuff now, you know, whereas when you're during the season, you kind of keep an eye on it and try and follow as best you can. Whereas actually now in the off season, I can proper dive into it and enjoy it properly.
What's the NFL contingent like within the Everton dressing room? Are there quite a few? And I mean, is the gaffer in? Have you got him onto the NFL? Because at West Ham, obviously Martin Noble's a massive fan. There's quite a few literate, serious NFL fans in the mix there. Is what about you? Are you flying solo on that front, or have you managed to platoon a few of them?
Honestly, Nat, when I look at the teams over the last little while, there's always been one or two other players that could have been quite into it, and one or two that you can have decent conversations with. Anthony Gordon being one at Everton, he's getting quite into it, and North American sport in general, a couple of the guys follow basketball, and even in the other teams, always one or two you can have good conversations. It's not quite huge numbers. They'll watch it. They'll sort of like, oh, what's that? What's this? And what's that? But to actually have conversations about what's going on, transactions and the bigger news, you know, there's only a couple guys really you can talk to.
You know, it's interesting because it's obviously collectively in this country growing year on year. And I noticed just even from, say, the Talk Sports show we do that obviously Ollie produces as well, you watch from compared to, I don't know, 10 years ago when I first started doing stuff with TalkSport, and it was no one really, you could find sort of a handful of people that knew about it. Now, when we're doing that live show, Darren Bent's coming in, different producers, production assistants, like it's a buzzing gallery because people are coming in and watching Red Zone and talking it and what's going on. So anecdotally, you see that difference, I find. But also, I was doing this corporate at Twickenham for the internationals in the autumn. And that, you know the drill. And that is where I'm interviewing players on stage, pre-game, post-game, that kind of thing. And it's mainly, actually, there were some current players that weren't playing, but mainly recently retired England legends, almost all of them, not just, oh yeah, I like a bit of NFL, super literate. And I wonder if it is a doctrine that particularly rugby players have a closer affinity to it or not, than say other sports, or whether that was just a coincidence. I don't know. But look, hey, we've got a ton to get into with you. We fired out on the fact you were coming on the show on social. And you are a fan favorite, as you know, on this show. So we got a lot of Patriots related questions, although some that are a little bit more left field as well. Ollie, the producer, big fan of yours, of course, Southampton fan. Stoke City fan, sorry. So Southampton fan. I was thinking Tom Deacon, who was on the show last week, Stoke City fan. So he's got a couple of questions for you as well. And I've got a few in as well. So we've kind of got 10 questions that we're going to roll with here, but probably we'll end up floating in a few more because we've got some last minute additions via Twitter. So let's get straight down to Patriots business.
I knew you were going to start right there.
Yeah. I got a ton. So here's one. This is a me question. The offensive coordinator situation really intrigues me for the benefit of our listeners. Asmir has just put his hands to his brow, looking pained, I think it's fair to say. So no more McDaniels, but who's calling the shots? Is it Patricia? Is it Joe Judge? Is it going to be one of them? Is it really going to be Belichick taking control of everything? What on earth is going on there?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? What on earth is going on? It really, you couldn't have put it any better because nobody really knows. There hasn't been any clarity ever since McDaniels left, and obviously left a big hole. There's no getting away from it. Mm. So who's going to be running the offense? Bill, who's never done it officially, really.
But would still be better than 99.9% of anyone else attempting to do it, right?
So you trust him based on his track record as a head coach in general. So, of course, you trust him, but you don't quite know. And then Matt Patricia, who was your defensive coordinator 3 years ago.
Yeah.
When he went to Detroit, you wouldn't want to talk about the offensive side of the ball. I mean, especially when you look at what Matt Stafford did with the Rams and how much he was potentially held back with the Lions, you can say Matt Patricia doesn't exactly fill you with any confidence. And then
right.
Joe Judge, who was your special teams coordinator before going to the New York Giants. And when going to the New York Giants again, okay, he had his offensive coordinators, but again, that offense didn't pull down any trees whatsoever. So you go into it thinking, well, who's going to run this? Who's going to be our offensive guru and our offensive genius? And nobody knows, and we don't know. So we can only wait till really training camp to get a proper, better idea and then take it from there as to who's going to take it over, especially into an offense that needs help. It doesn't have dynamic playmakers, doesn't have people who can sometimes make something out of nothing. It's going to need a heck of a lot of work.
I think some really, I completely agree with that, and really interesting points you're making on, firstly, a lot of the media gossip and the buzz is that there is a offensive coordinator gig to be won by committee, right? Like a quarterback controversy. So the Patricia and Judge, Belichick's watching to see what happens in camp before he makes his call. But both of those, Judge obviously made his name as a special teams coach. And as you say, Patricia's a defensive guy. Belichick, back in the early days, I think his first coaching gig was on the offensive side of the ball, right? Assistant gig. And he's somebody that's one of the all-time great football minds and has studied so much film. And you read and look at the Belichick trajectory, it is completely feasible that he could coordinate an offensive game plan and call plays, and you wouldn't, well, you'd be intrigued by it, but you certainly wouldn't be unduly concerned. So I wonder whether he isn't sure which way he wants to play it, or whether he wants to have this collective game plan use one of those guys as a de facto lieutenant. If he's thinking about McDaniels, it, as you say, is big shoes to fill. So he wants to kind of keep it protected. It just, it's a fascinating narrative right now. And I guess this always comes back to something you and I've talked about many times over the years, right? Who's going to second guess Belichick? You must, as a Patriots fan, have faith that even if we don't know what the plan is right now, and even if they maybe have one, that it'll come good. Or are you genuinely looking at this thinking, okay, I'm really worried. This just looks like a shambles.
Well, you know, we've obviously talked a lot on the show, Nat, and, you know, we've talked over years in the NFL and the Patriots. Of course, there's always that overriding factor in Bill, we trust.
Yeah.
So he's always going to have the benefit of the doubt. So I could never say here and say, you know, sit here and say, oh my God, Bill Belichick doesn't know what he's doing, because, you know, this track record speaks for itself. But there is no getting away from it. When you take away those Tom Brady years out of his career and the Patriots' career, there is those sort of down to earth moments. The last couple of years, the Patriots, even again last year, making the playoffs was a very good achievement. But it was as one of the last, as a wild card team, and it wasn't winning your division very comfortably. It wasn't as a Super Bowl favorite. It was, again, just getting into the playoffs, maybe because no one else quite really took that spot. So it has been the last couple of years of back down earth. So we can say Bill, we trust, but at the same time, when you look at the roster, it's not screaming, oh my God, here's an AFC, especially with the AFC now and how stacked it is.
Right.
You don't go in and saying, okay, well, there's going to be a couple of players who are going to get us out of trouble or make something happen or do something where we have superstars. This is going to be one heck of a collective effort where they're going to have to play really good football. Bill Belichick's attention to detail, no stone left unturned and all that kind of stuff. And like you say, who's going to be running that offense? It's still quite a few question marks. And it's question marks we've had in the last 2 years. Who's going to be the quarterback? Cam Newton. What's he going to look like? Well, we all saw it even last year. Cam Newton, Mac Jones, what are they going to look like? Too many question marks, you know, on this team right now to be a little bit unsettled in these positions, because no matter how the team is unsettled, they have been the last couple of years. They had, you know, the Bill Belichick and the Josh McDaniels, who are two obviously incredibly good coaches.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about what this year might look like in terms of the roster, because inevitably in the quarterback obsessed world that we're in, everybody's looking at Mac and the second year game he's going to have in terms of, is it sophomore slump? Is he going to kick on? Is he going to stay about the same? The odds seem at the moment, based on the first 10 minutes of our chat here, quite stacked against him, right? Because you would think, because even the kind of player that he is, which demonstrated, look at the plus side of it, he clearly composed, not fazed by the big occasion, works very fluently in a system, efficiently, somebody that's protecting the ball well, but he doesn't have, as yet, hasn't demonstrated this dynamic ceiling, partly because he, I guess, hasn't been asked to do that, right? So you would expect it's more of the same. They will ask for more of the same. Be careful with the ball. Don't try and win games on your own. Or do you think they'll unleash him a little bit more? Is that impossible to tell until we know what the hell kind of offense they're going to run? Based on watching Mac Jones a lot last season, do you feel he's got a lot more to offer than he was enabled to show us last year?
Nat, I think he's got more to offer. I think, and anytime you go into a league and you kind of come out of college in the first couple of years, it's a learning curve, and then of course you're going to be better. But we also all understood, I think it was the general consensus, that Mac Jones was probably last year the most NFL ready because of his time in college with Alabama and Nick Saban and everything. He was probably the most ready NFL quarterback. But that's also because I think his ceiling was probably the lowest out of some of those other quarterbacks in that quarterback draft class. So, you know, as much as he came in and was probably the most solid all-around rookie, I don't think he's got that much more room to grow. So by saying that, I'm thinking we've seen, you know, a good amount of Mac Jones that I think we're always going to see. And based on the track record of the coaches and how the Patriots run their team. They're not going to unleash him in the fact that they're going to let him go and throw the ball 40 times a game. You know, I don't think he has probably the weapons for it either. You know, so it is very much going to be maybe a step further, but he's going to be a game management type of quarterback. You know, get your first downs. You know, avoid the high risk throws and high risk plays. You know, keep things steady. Obviously, establish the running game, and of course, have your defense still play its part. So, I don't think it's going to be a huge step forward for Mac. I think he'll be better in terms of course, now he's got the experience of 1 year in the NFL. He will have seen some things where he's going to get better and understand things a little bit better and situations a little bit better. But without having the backbone of Josh McDaniels, who's obviously been with him, it could be tricky. So I expect to see a progression, but I wouldn't say it will be a big one.
You talk about the weapons. I mean, Devontae Parker is the most notable signing of the offseason on either side of the ball, certainly offensively, right? I mean, where are you on that acquisition?
Yeah, I mean, I like it. There wasn't a lot given up for him, I guess, can we say? You know, I think it was a third rounder. Mm-hmm. So I think, again, it helps that sort of wide receiver room, and I think it helps in the weapon side of things. But I don't think when we look at the division, that I don't think when the Dolphins are acquiring Tyreek Hill and, you know, the Bills are locking up Stephon Diggs for the foreseeable future and Von Miller, it's not quite in that level of moves. So again, it's a nice piece. It adds a bit more depth. I think it gives them another string to the bow, but I don't think it's something that's going to be a huge game changer for us.
You know, looking, you know, we're going to talk a bit about Parker, and obviously I've seen a lot of him, you know, with Miami. He's never lived up to his potential. Injuries have played a part there as well, but he's only really had one dynamite season back in 2019. Other than that, and as I say, injuries in last season, of course, particularly, but have stunted his growth. But I wonder if he's one of those kind of players that, and I always thought this, I remember us talking about it, so I always thought Mo Sanu was a really shrewd signing for you and just didn't quite play out. But I wonder if he's one of those players that will absolutely fly within there, particularly because he's going to be, you know, you've got Jacoby Myers in the mix. Look at this depth chart, right? So Nelson Aguilar is still there.
Yep.
Some younger. Bourne. Yeah, Kendrick Bourne, of course, as well. The Jonnu Smith Hunter Henry thing, I guess that could really kick on because it was very.
Well, we saw Hunter Henry be, Mac's sort of safety blanket, wasn't he? Especially in the red zone. So again, Henry's good. We expect Jonnu Smith, who we all loved when he signed, we expect him to take a step forward.
Yeah.
You know, what's going to happen with Akeel Harry? I don't know. Nobody knows quite. So, you know, they've got a decent, you're right. Now there's a decent depth chart, but there's not one outstanding one where you think, okay, he's going to be number one. Now, again, we're basing on Devonta Parker's time at the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah.
Maybe he can take that step forward if he's given a bit more of a role, but that only remains to be seen. We're only speculating.
Yeah, we are. And it's the Patriots interested me last season. As listeners will know, because I harped on about it so much, I fancy they'd have a decent side and a decent shot at the playoffs, and that played out when many people were really underrating them and underwriting them, right? Or writing them off, I should say. This year, the Jets are going to be much better than they were year on year. The Dolphins have obviously re-upped and are super intriguing with their whole new direction. And of course, the Bills are one of the best teams in the NFL and will be again this year. So I'm worried about the prognosis with the Patriots this year. I mean, I think they'll battle, they'll fight. Of course, the Belichick side rarely does anything but that. But I don't know, man. It feels like it could be an 8-9 kind of season, right?
Yeah. I couldn't have. I wish I could say something different. And I wish I really wish I could. I was even like on the Cam. Cam can be somewhat of what it used to be. And I'm always looking at the positive side of it. But, you know, and even I think looking at the positives, that if we can finish 500 or just above, same as last year, I think it's a good season. I think it's a good season. You know, when you look at those players, I think when you look at that selection of players, again, I don't see how much more is doable. And I go back to it again. I mean, the AFC now. I mean, look at the AFC West. Look could Russell Wilson coming into that division now and making Denver, you know, probably one of the Super Bowl favorites. They go from not making the playoffs to Super Bowl favorites. So this is in your own conference, what's happening. And you look at that AFC West, it's brutal. You look at Cleveland, you know, Deshaun Watson, whether he'll play this year, we'll have to remain so what's going to happen there. But Lamar Jackson will bounce back. He's always going to be, you know, an MVP type of player. And you've got the Bengals who are the representatives for the AFC in the Super Bowl. And then let alone in your own division, Matt Ryan comes to the Colts as well. So he makes them better. Doug Peterson gets hired with Jacksonville. So the AFC South gets stronger. So I think overall, when you look at it, it's the Patriots not really moved anywhere. And everyone else has gotten a lot better. So it's going to get even more difficult.
Yeah, my God, just listening to you map it out, the depth in the AFC, is it crazy? Deshaun Watson, let's just go off on that tangent for a minute. That feels like, I mean, and look, outside of anything else, just from a footballing perspective, he's definitely going to miss a chunk of time, right? Well, yeah. You know, I think everyone feels that is going to be the case. Given where that's left them with Baker, and they haven't obviously moved Baker on, and the optics of that and the optics of the whole thing. I know Browns fans that are disgusted by the whole thing, the financial implications of it, giving up what they've given up. Where do you land on that? So let's just kind of roll down. And as I say, if it's possible to kind of remove the off the field element of it, just from a footballing perspective, does it make sense for you, assuming Watson, let's say, misses six games, right? And then he's their quarterback, their franchise quarterback for the next couple of years. Do you get a sense that it's going to play out and work out for them? Or is this, we're talking about the Browns here, Asmir, is this going to be yet another Brownsian disaster unfurling in front of our eyes?
No, I'd like to think... you know what, actually, I mean, not a little bit of background, but this is going to make me look incredibly, terribly worse than it is with my geekiness. But I watch a thing on YouTube called Building the Browns. And, you know, you look at their franchise, and I think to answer your question, I don't see them being the old Browns anymore. I think the way they operate now is a lot more shrewd. And these are some pretty good operators and quite a smart front office. And don't forget, I don't think this front office and head coach obviously drafted Baker, so they kind of inherited the situation.
Yeah.
But going forward, I mean, what we think morally of Deshaun Watson or not, I think if we just focus on the football side of things, that's the cost of doing business to get a star franchise quarterback. That's just what it is these days. So, you know, would I have wanted the Patriots to do the same thing from a football point of view? Yes, I do. From a moral point of view, we can debate that. So there's that side of things. Of course, you want that guy, and if you can have that guy for the next 5 to 10 years, then, and multiple trips to the playoffs, and giving yourself a chance to be successful, then that's what you're going to do, and that's what the Browns have done. And I think with the people running it now, and I quite like Stefanski. I quite like the way he's done his team. When you look at those players, I mean, don't forget, it's all about Deshaun Watson, but you know, they've got maybe one of the top three running backs in the NFL with Nick Chubb, and you look at some of the pieces. So
stacked,
you know, I think the Browns are going to be okay.
Well, I agree they're stacked, and that's kind of where I, like, they've underperformed quite obviously. And I think too much in the last couple of years, I think too much of that has been put on Baker's shoulders. But again, they're a really intriguing story going into this season. No doubt about that. I'm going to dive to Twitter at the NC show. Jonathan Littlemore, appreciate your tweet. He's picked up on what we were chatting about earlier with Belichick and potentially operating as their offensive coordinator, and follows that up because he talks, of course, about Belichick's primary status as a defensive mind. But as we touched on, there's more to Belichick than that, of course, but it's a fair point. Of course, that is what he's made his great name on over the years. So his question in relation to that, Asmir, is can you think of any fellow goalkeepers that could play as a striker? So out of the goalkeepers union out there, who do you think would be the most dangerous striker?
Oh, well, listen, I think I'm going to go with the ones I've played with. I mean, I've got to say, Pickford and Donnarumma would be good. And even Thibaut Courtois. I mean, Pickford's left foot. So anything that drops down the box, if he gets his left foot on it, it will be hit very hard and smashed and hopefully in the back of the net. So it's difficult. And Donnarumma would be an incredible target, man. It's just a freaking
physical beast.
Just get it in the mixer.
Lump it up to Donnarumma and you're sorted. Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a good selection of those guys. I think they could cause a bit of trouble in that opponent's penalty area. And
to be fair, you've got a better goal scoring record than all of them, right? So I think my answer, Jonathan, is Asmir.
I wouldn't want to brag about that, but also my training skills and my skills in training, I need to get some footage. But
yeah,
it's up really there with some of the best.
You can handle yourself, can you? All right, I'd like to see that. Here's one from Claire Cooper. Hey, Claire, Asmir, what is your overall impression of the Patriots' defensive setup with multiple year two guys that have barely played? That's a really interesting point, isn't it? Because if we think about teams that, and the Patriots are very much, I think, in this camp last year, that if certain players really play to their potential on the upside, then they're going to have a good year. And when you're analyzing teams and looking at teams going into the season, you start to get concerns around teams where that's happening too much. There are too many players you're looking at on both sides of the ball. You think, all right, if they have a great season, whereas other teams are loaded with, in principle, sure things. And the Patriots defense seems to be very much that. They've got obviously a couple of the vets back, but it's all changed. A lot of those leaders have gone now, and they've got these players that we know Belichick is a defensive guru, has found real value in some cases in the draft because of injury, and their second, third year players that haven't shown us what they can do yet, but all could come together and it could be extraordinary. I guess it's a precedent of sorts. Dallas's defense last year, that going into last season, we thought their offense is going to buzz, but defensively, I don't know. There's all these young players. We don't know. And they were absolute ballers. So I guess if things go to plan, that's the kind of Patriots D we might see. What we talked a lot about offense. What have you made of where they're at defensively?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think we're probably all a little bit more happy with that side of the ball, because when you look at Belichick's record and being a defensive coach, Patricia being back in, Belichick's son, you know, I think there is...
Hang on, Matt, Patricia's Belichick's son.
No, sorry. Well, like, it might be.
It might be, you know.
They try to be the same, and it was.
Patricia tried it, didn't he? Yeah, that's never going to work. It's never going to work. I wonder actually whether Steve Belichick is his actual son. That's a tough gig. It's the Frank Sinatra Jr. gig, right? You know,
I mean,
in the same building as well. That can't be easy.
No, to be Belichick Jr. is not going to be. It's not going to be easy at all. And I think from that point of view, you know, I think they've got some good defensive minds, but that's where I'm a little bit more. If you're telling me Matt Patricia is going to be a bit more of a consultant there and involved in that set of things with Steve Belichick and obviously Bill, then I think they'll put it together. They'll put a nice little mix together. And I think there is obviously the big hold of having to fill J.C. Jackson. You know, I think J.C. Jackson was one of those players where he's established himself as one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL. So that's certainly what I would believe and what I would say. So I think that's going to be a big miss. So how we're going to, you know, with Malcolm Butler coming back, I don't think there's one person who's going to fill that hole, you know? So they're going to have to play with different schemes and hope that, like you said, those second year players, the Josh Uche's type of players, the Kyle Duggars, can they take that step forward and help that defense and really shore some things up with those veterans as well. You know, I don't mind the addition of Malcolm Butler. I think, again, knowledge of the system, being able to probably fit in a little bit better than others is important. Jabril Peppers, he'll bring another versatility to that defense. So I'm not too down on the defense at all. I think the defense is definitely going to play its part in keeping the Patriots in as many games as possible.
And, you know, McCourty's still there as well. So it's not as if they're completely clean house in terms of the veteran smarts. And, yeah, it's spot on with Butler. I think that is an underestimated part of his re-signing in this, you know, with Belichick's MO, right? And it's that setting the tone, understanding it. And Butler's maybe the prototype of right system kind of player, right?
Yeah.
The ultimate play of that. Hey, Claire's got a follow-up. a question, and we're going to roll it in because she says for funsies. So fair play. For funsies, Asmid, did you have a draft crush? And if so, what team did he go to if it wasn't the Patriots? So was there a player in this year's draft that you were desperate for Belichick to wheel and deal and get? But or maybe they did. Maybe he did land it. Was it part of the Patriots draft class? Who was your draft crush of 2022?
Well, you know, it's one of those where, oh God, the draft. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Well, in terms of what I wanted, what I wanted in the draft, and what came and how it happened,
didn't quite correlate.
It's a long story. I mean, you've sort of seen some of my tweets where it's obviously quite baffling in a way, with Cole Strange, and then of course everything comes up with people that were other people were looking at him, he would have been off the board. So I think for us to go on that route in the first round was as far from my draft crush as it could have ever been.
Come on. Nothing better than picking up a guard in the first round. But yeah, you drafted a receiver. Second, third round?
We added some speed. I mean, listen, you talk about draft crush, knowing it's probably never going to happen. Knowing that it's not the Patriots MO, I would have liked someone like a John Metchie III. I think coming from, again, a big program in Alabama, I think prove himself when you're picking at that bottom end of the first round, you know, I think he would have been a nice one. I think that would have been, again, a wishful thought where get another weapon, a wide receiver, someone who can make plays for Mac and help him. And obviously a little bit of understanding from Alabama as well. So that would have been my draft crush pick, but obviously it went completely the other way.
Yeah, diametric opposite what you ended up with. Great question. Thank you for that, Claire. Appreciate that. Right, let's go back to, we've got another one. Another fan question, actually, from Nerman Dahl. So, hey, Nerman, thank you for this. Which team coach, Asmir, that you've worked with is most similar in attitude and appearance, and I guess overall style of coaching, or maybe he means physical appearance with the cutoff hoodies, to Bill Belichick? And does that style of coaching work for you as a player? So out of all the coaches, and they don't necessarily have to be managers per se, anyone kind of within any coaching staff that you've worked with over the years, who would you say is closest to Belichick?
You know, I think it's fair to say there's probably no 100% comparison, but I think when you look at some of the managers that I've worked with Belichick, because Bill Belichick is the greatest of all time, then obviously you have to look at the likes of Mourinho, who I worked with. I think just that sort of caliber of manager where it's winning above anything else, and it's that attention to detail, and it's maybe that sort of icy demeanor, and you know, people maybe take him the wrong way at times, especially with their confrontations and I guess their behaviors with the media coming across that way. That's probably one I would compare him to, and probably the closest one that I've worked with. You know, I think you can also look at likes of Rafa Benitez, who's been there and done it, one of the best ones. And again, you can have a bit of a prickly relationship with the media, but
yeah,
you know, I'll go for Mourinho from now, just because it's the GOAT, you know, comparison. And someone who's just been there and done it and been at the highest level for so long.
I think it's a great comparison. Yeah. I mean, because by all accounts, Belichick has got a dry sense of humor and is certainly a lot funnier than maybe some people perceive him to be. And I get the same vibe. I mean, maybe you'll beg to differ with Mourinho, but he seems to be one of those coaches that, yeah, is that fair to say? Like, has a laugh with his players outside of the media glare and is maybe not.
Yeah, I think there's, like I said, there's that one sort of public persona. A perception of him, and then there's the one behind the scenes where it's completely different. So not knowing Bill Belichick 100%, and maybe he's not that cuddly and fuzzy inside those walls, but you know, I know from just that persona that they project to the outside world, I think there's obviously a relation there.
You know, with coaches, and you know, obviously from firsthand experience, I'm curious, have you noticed through your career, as you've, because you've played at the top level for, 15 years, I guess, something like that. 17, still going strong. Hey, you're going to Brady it up. Don't you worry about that. You're going to be going when you're 54, Asmit. If not in the pros, then for my five-a-side team. And hey, I will have
listen,
to.
And you're the only one. Funny side story. I go for a scan a couple of weeks ago. Just, you know, a regular end of season scan, check the knees are all good and everything else. You know, don't need any work within the season. Physio comes back to me. Oh, you know, perfectly healthy knees for a 35-year-old. I said, I'm only 34, you cheeky. What's he going for?
That year, it becomes increasingly important. With this, what are you talking about? Man, but yeah, they're your spring chicken for a keeper. I mean, you could, you can just roll and roll, right? I mean,
fingers crossed, knock on wood, right?
Man. Yeah, exactly. So my question was, on coaches. So in the 17 years you've been top pro, have you noticed a discernible change in style of management from the top guy? Have they had to adapt and change, or really is it?
You know. 100%. What a fantastic question. And it's probably gone similar to the NFL, maybe even the NBA, whatever you want to compare it to. Two changes is one, the coaches become younger,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think the head coaches, the managers become younger. When I was first getting in, you wouldn't get a manager under 50, for example, that's right. Really worked their way up and they wouldn't maybe get those opportunities to look. But later, when you think about it, whereas now they can be 40 odd, less, mm-hmm. Younger than 40. So they're getting these opportunities a lot quicker, and you're dealing with guys who are quite close to your generation. So I definitely get that. And I think that that's obviously the second part of it is that relationships, they're not as distant from the players. They're a lot closer to the players, and the relationships are a lot closer than they were in the past. So I think that younger side of things in the relationship has definitely changed.
You know, that's always fascinated me, watching on. And I talked to OC about this a bit with Coughlin. So I said, Coughlin, obviously, not just the fact that when he was at the height of the Giants' success, he was in his 60s by then. And the nature of style of coach that he was, quite old school, on the surface anyway, demonstrative, shout. I mean, famously for our listeners anyway, because I've told the story so many times, shouted at me when I was recording a link at Giants training, which haunts me to this day. It was both the gap in age and the style of coach, right? But OC said that neither was really a factor for him, but particularly the age thing, it didn't matter at all that he could connect with players irrespective of the obvious discrepancy with, say, pop culture or many pop culture references, right? And I wonder if that has changed now. Do you feel that is one of the core things that on a personal level in terms of sensibility and interests and as opposed to life? So, pop culture, what you're listening to, what you're watching, does that need to be tight? The players expect that to be the much more of a closer connection with their coach.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly. I mean, I don't know if it's an expectation, but it's definitely what's changed, right? That's so much changed. I mean, my manager now is, whatever, is nine years older than me.
Right.
Whereas, I remember being 20 and I said, no one being under 50. It's like 30, 40 years difference. And you think, what do we have in common, Jeremy? Nothing, nothing really. So it was like, he's your boss, do your thing. And then that's where it kind of ends. Whereas now you can actually have conversations and that sort of line, those lines of communication and relationship are a lot more open.
It's fascinating, God. We could talk about that for a lot longer, but we got other questions to get into, Asmit. Business to take care of. So this is from Ollie, the producer. And I think it's one that many of our listeners will share and be desperate for the answer. How do you fix the Pro Bowl? Pro Bowl. And bearing in mind, you love your NBA as well. You love your baseball too. I mean, it's a full house. And both of those All-Star games, so much better than the Pro Bowl.
Yeah. Well, I think one first thing you would have to do is move it away from the end of the season.
Yeah.
Because injuries and last thing a lot of these players want is another year season playing for nothing. Another week to the season playing for nothing. It's different if you're going to the Super Bowl, but that's why we don't even get to see the best players playing the Pro Bowl many years. And that's probably the main difference between those guys. I mean, the NBA All-Star game is a glorified exhibition until about the last 5 minutes of the game. Mm-hmm. And baseball is a little bit more serious. But again, you're seeing the best pitchers and the best players playing in those games. So I think you'd want to see the Bradys and the Rogers and everyone else of those Pro Bowls. And I can't remember the last time I've seen those guys. Okay, bear in mind, they have played in Super Bowls, but I think that's the first thing you need to try and do is move it away from the end of the season.
So, how are you going to do that? Because they're not going to, I can't see them moving it into, no one's going to sign off on a, you know, week nine bye week and it's the Pro Bowl. I mean, because, you know, for obvious reasons, right? No one, they're not going to go with that.
No, it's a difficult task. I mean, like I say, I'm not saying it's doable. We both agree that probably it's not doable, but it's just, if you're going to make it, you know, resemble anything or a good All-Star game, a good Pro Bowl, it can't be at the end of season, because I know even for my industry, you think, I've got another week for what, you know?
Yeah, right.
Nothing great. So then you have to move it and then go from there, because if you don't get the timing of it right, it really is irrelevant.
I like the whole skills stuff, superstar stuff that they add to it. And I wonder whether that's the way they should go, is forget the actual game, just build that out more. I mean, how cool would it be if we could have like an all-star, and like pick different sports, but, you know, like an all-star five-a-side.
Five-a-side, yeah. Maybe make it 7-on-7 or like a flag football game or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Just mix it up a bit and just have, you know, create, like build out the whole skills thing and have table football and darts. I want to see NFL players playing darts. That's what I want to see.
There you go. Yeah.
I think we fixed it. I think the answer is we can't fix the Pro Bowl proper. There you go. Now, here's a goodie. Will Tom Brady make a good analyst? So Brady, of course, signing for the big bucks. And I was listening to an interesting show. Richard Deitch, who was a long time the editor of Sports Illustrated, has got a sports media podcast, get some very interesting guests on it. And they were talking about the deal that Brady signed and how they're going to use him, because the obvious success story in recent years, the parallel was Romo, right? But then Drew Brees didn't work out quite as they'd hoped. And so it's not necessarily a given that even the great Brady is going to breeze into an analyst role in terms of a live game. But one of the points they're making on the show is that how important is that? Because they can use Brady on so many other shows. So even if he doesn't necessarily sit fluently in the booth, they'll still get bang for their buck elsewhere, just, you know, by using him in a studio show or similar, right? What do you think? Brady, I mean, God, if anyone's going to just walk into that and make it look straightforward, probably Brady, right? I mean, it's the attention to detail, his diligence. He's clearly, as we can tell from all the media ops he's done, erudite, composed, clearly articulate what he's seeing. I mean, I think he's as close to a sure thing as we're going to get as an analyst, isn't he?
Yeah, Nat. I mean, I'm going to piggyback on that. I think he will be a success, because whatever this guy's done in his career, he's not done it anything short of, you know, really, really good or great. Mm-hmm. So you'd like to think that he wouldn't have signed up to this, even though obviously the amount of money is incredible. I don't think he would have signed up to it unless he felt like he could deliver a good job.
Right.
So I think he will do a good job. I don't think, you know, maybe right from the first day it'll be amazing, but I think his insight, when you watch those Tom versus Time shows, I mean, his detail of the game, you know, the fact that he loved to watch film and he's obsessed with it. And that's why he's still playing now, because he can process the game so much faster and probably better than most people. That should, in theory, translate well to the booth. And, you know, he can give us great insights, same as Tony Romo. But again, the name also, I think, will be a big draw. When you look at the Romos, the Aikmans, you know, all those guys, I think they're going to be, that's going to be half the battle, is the fact that people are just going to want to watch Tom Brady and hear what he has to say.
You know, I think that's spot on. And the challenge, I guess, for a lot of people in that role is how critical they're prepared to be, you know, because that's not an easy thing to do, particularly if Brady goes into broadcasting talking about players that he knows and has played with and, you know, has a relationship of sorts with. I mean, that's a tough gig, right? If you've got to call them out and call specific things out. And I think a lot of players struggle with that, right? So I think that's going to be interesting to see how he tackles that. I reckon he's going to have a good sense of humor. You know, I think that's quite important. And if it's underestimated with Belichick, I think it probably is with Brady as well. I reckon he's going to be quite funny. I have a feel about that. But you nailed it. He's so diligent. And without, well, yeah, let's, I'm not, obviously not going to name names disparagingly, but if I, you know, you and I have worked as outside of stuff like this on shows. And I remember the first time we worked together was a live game, right? And you had clearly were ready for that game. You weren't a pro that walked in and thought, I'm a professional footballer, I'm just going to riff this. That you were ready and focused for that gig. And I think a lot of players, because they're great players, think, I'll just breeze in and you know, I'll be fine. And then realize this is a whole different, this is a whole different thing. And you've got to be ready. And so on that basis alone, in terms of just the, I think it's a fundamental now with most broadcasters, most players turn broadcasters, and certainly at the level that Brady's going to be playing at, they're not going to let him roll any other way, but they're not going to need to, because Brady is just going to be so ready. That first gig, he's going to be so ready for it that I'm sure he'll make it look like he's been doing it for the last 20 years. So I think the answer, will Tom Brady make a good analyst? Yeah, I think it's a thumbs up yes from me and Asmir.
Yes.
Have you ever got a hole in one? Asks producer Rob.
Not yet.
You haven't.
I'm working on it.
How serious is your golf? Are you?
Cause
you
no, play... my golf is average. No. My golf is your 18 to 20 handicap, bang average. I don't play enough.
Is that the key to it? Is it all about the reps? Do you think?
Yeah. Yeah, it's all about the reps. I love watching golf. Love following it, but no. It's not where I want it to be, but it probably won't be until I stop playing.
Yeah. So that, as we established earlier, another 15 years before
you turn to your golf.
What's your dream sporting event? Is it to go and watch? What's your bucket list? Is it the Masters? Would that be up there?
You know what? Actually, I'm taking off one this weekend of Champions League final.
Oh, you got to the Champions League final.
I'm doing that one. Yeah. I didn't want to rub it in anywhere.
Amazing.
So that's one. And then it's between the Super Bowl and the Masters.
Yeah, we've got to get you to a Super Bowl. We've got to take care of that. It's always sits right bang in the season. So again, you're not going to be able to do it for another 50 years. When you finally do hang them up,
Super Bowl 120, yeah.
Exactly. We'll be there. Where are we? Just going back to, here we go, back to the questions. So you haven't ever got a hole in one. We've got to work on that. So actually, this is a kind of flip of the question we had earlier on in terms of which goalkeeper would make the best striker. Which NFL player would make the best goalkeeper?
You know, I think it has to be a certain position on the field, because when I played a little bit of in Canada, like small little bit of peewee football, you know, football, it's American football as they call it over there. I was always either quarterback, because your arm was quite good, or I was a tight end.
Yeah, right.
That figures. So big frame.
Yeah.
Catch the ball, good in, you know, contact, that kind of stuff with catching the ball up high. So I'm going to have to say one of those tight ends, not, you know, like a Travis, like Kelsey, a Kelsey type.
Yeah,
like a Kelsey type, maybe even a Gronk. No, because they're going to fill up the goal.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
I'm just imagining rocking up to Kentish Town five side league and Gronk's a goal. just lead on the post.
I'm going to say one of those tight ends.
Yeah, that figures. I think tight end makes a lot of sense. And yeah, I always thought back in the day, Tony Gonzalez, one of the greats to play that position. Because they just got that, just that balance. That's so, I think tight ends, particularly that Gonzalez was maybe the prototype or one of the pioneers, that new school tight end that Kittle and Kelsey and followed in his footsteps. Just, I think it's until you watch them play up close, you underestimate just how athletic they are. You just think they're, you know, big, slightly lumbering, and then you see them. My God, the lift. I mean, a lot of basketball players transition to tight end as well. Antonio Gates was a basketball player.
Yeah.
You know, so they've got that spring and that bounce. Safety as well. And I know there might be kind of a height issue with some safeties, but you know, in the same way, you know, Pickford is a smaller goalkeeper compared to many. I could see, you know, a thumping safety that flies into it, just doing all kinds of damage as well. So yeah, I love that question. One more for you, and then we'll get out of Dodge. Have you already booked your ticket to Munich?
No, you know, I haven't yet. I mean, I need to first of all get back to a game because obviously we've had COVID, and then last year I couldn't get to a game. I'm gonna have to have a word with these Premier League schedule makers. I mean, I kept putting Everton on a Sunday or Monday because we weren't in Europe. They were putting us, my schedule was all over the place because they were getting those TV slots, and they get, you know, especially as the season went on, they were getting good viewing. On us, but every both the games last year, I couldn't, on a Sunday, couldn't get down. So I'm going to have to word. I mean, this is ridiculous. So
hopefully the cards fall for you this time. And Munich's going to be, I suppose it'd be possible. So if you're playing on a Saturday, you could get to it, right?
I'm going to have to make a last minute call on this, but I am desperate to get there.
Munich could be, it's got to be a road trip. We're going to hit Dublin, and we're heading to Dublin for the college game in August as well. So maybe we should try and rope you into that, although the season will have started by then, so that could be tricky.
What a life you guys live.
It's a hard knock life, man. Hey, Asmir, it is always a pleasure catching up with you, man. Love chatting ball with you. It's great to see all is going well with you, and enjoy the summer holiday. Enjoy the Champions League final, and I'm sure some time on a beach somewhere as well before you get back to the grind. We'll push out stuff on social and links to your social channels, but the foundation as well. One, I've always mentioned that and the work you're doing there. So tell us what you're up to on that front and where our listeners can get and how they can get involved.
Yeah, absolutely, Nan. I mean, thanks always for having me, and a big shout out to you and all the producers. But a little bit on the foundation, it's the Asmir Begovic Foundation. So you can find us on all social media and platforms. And obviously we work in helping kids and building sports facilities for them to obviously have fun, play sports, and be active and social and everything. So you can find a lot more there. We're going to hope to get our fundraising and everything and events going again next while here. Obviously, everything's been a little bit delayed and put on hold the last couple of years. But, yeah, it's been a lot of fun. So it keeps me busy on top of my day job. So, no, it's all good.
Brilliant stuff. We're loving that. Loving your work as ever. Come back and see us soon, man, and we will have another bumper mailbag for you. It's always a pleasure. Thanks to everybody who's fired questions in as well at the NC Show, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Still no TikTok, Asmir. Ollie's just got to pull his finger out.
Only a matter of time.
Look after yourself, bud. Take care.
Thanks, guys.
Brilliant stuff from Asmir. Follow him on social at Asmir1. We'll find out all about his foundation, all the other stuff he's involved with, a very fine goalkeeping glove line as well. And I can tell you from firsthand experience, I got a pair in my locker, of course, because he is the best in the business and we love him. And it will be great to catch up with him soon. Now, we got a lot of other great guests coming your way over the coming weeks. It's been good, hasn't it, the last couple of weeks? OC and J Bell, Asmir, the brilliant Tom Deacon as well. Iron Mike's going to be back in the house soon. And a lot of Iron Mike fans out there. And other Brill guests lined up for you. So we're going to keep the pods coming thick and fast. We've got to sneak in an edge rush propo quite soon as well. I want to take a look, start getting my edge on and start looking at where things are landing. Now we've had both free agency in the draft and starting to get a sense of the runners and riders. So lots of good stuff heading your way over the coming weeks. So if you haven't already, subscribe to us. Whichever pod platform you listen to us on, big up to all of you leaving reviews as well. Really appreciate that because it helps spread the word, helps with our sponsors, all the good stuff. I know Spotify have got that option now as well. A lot of you leaving reviews on there. iTunes, of course. Well, Apple Pod, I should say. Likewise. So we really appreciate that. We look at them all and it means a lot. So thank you for doing that. Right, we're back next week with more football goodness. See you then. Bye for now.
Podcast Network.